Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're meant to be going for dinner, and he said for me, well, let's go for dinner on Wednesday. I said, I can't do it. Any other day? Didn't get back to me. What a fucking prick.
Yeah, he's too important for everybody now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He takes a course of steroids for about 3 years, and suddenly he's fucking betting everyone.
Let's go.
Welcome to Citizen. We've got a special guest today, Francis Foster from Trigonometry. Hello.
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm living the dream. How's it going in England?
Oh, mate, we're living a dream. It's not a good dream, though.
What's the...
You know what I mean? It's one of those dreams where you're like, I need to wake up pretty fucking quickly.
I feel like you guys have... It's smaller, right? So it's like if you have a couple of drops of nasty shit in the ocean, you don't notice. You know, sometimes like we're very insulated in Texas to some of the bullshit that's going on around the country. Not inflation, obviously, or not grocery prices, but we don't run into a lot of the silly nonsense for the most part. And when we do and confront it and say, no, that's stupid, I'm not participating in that, generally speaking, there's no canceled people. But I feel like in such a condensed, especially if you live in London, it's like all on top of you all the time.
Well, the interesting thing about the UK is that, number one, it's obviously smaller. Number two, London is effectively like New York in that it's its own separate entity, and it has very little to do culturally or politically with the rest of the UK. And what actually happens is that people in London think that London is the world when it isn't. It's just London, and everybody else thinks incredibly different from everybody in London. Like, you go up to the average person in London, you go, what's a woman? They'll have a breakdown, not be able to answer it, start crying, run away. And if you did that in Newcastle, they'd probably hit you because they wouldn't understand the question.
Yeah.
That's enough about Chris Williamson.
Is he a Newcastle fan?
Chris, no, I don't think Chris is. I don't think Chris likes soccer. I think Chris is, he was a cricket guy, actually.
Oh, like, he might be, actually, yeah.
Yeah,
I can't.
He is.
That's too much. I mean, fuck that. It's too much math and thinking and shit. So too much going on. Like, I see it and I can understand parts of it. But I don't know. I don't know, man. It's like, it feels like a very country club activity.
Oh, absolutely it is. And you know it's a country club activity because what they break for tea.
Yeah.
they literally go, oh, this is a tea break, and then they stop. In what other sport would you do that? There is a whole swathe of British sports where you would only really... Because you know it's for the upper classes because the rules are so complicated that you need a degree to be able to understand it. Rugby union's like that. Cricket's like that. There's other sports as well. You're like... I don't want to have to study a rule book for a year in order to be able to play the game.
Yeah, it seems like a lot.
It's too much.
Well, one of the, like, even if I took you to a baseball game, you would understand all the rules and within that game.
Yeah.
Like, I could just explain it to you what's happening during the game and you would understand most of it. I don't feel like that's the case for cricket.
No.
Right? Because it's like the day is over and you're like, oh, shit, that was... Who won? You're like, nobody yet.
Nobody yet. But
nobody yet.
Trust me, on the fifth day, that's when we're going to know. You're like, 5 days? 5 days I have to watch this thing?
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
And people are nuts about it as well. Like, people will... Look, I have friends who literally stay up around the night because there's a test in Australia. And they stay up literally around the night to then go and watch the cricket. And this is five days.
I've woken up early to watch World Cup games before, I guess.
As in we're talking soccer?
Yeah.
Of course, but, you know, that's a good sport.
you're a West Ham fan, right?
I am indeed, yeah.
Let's see, there was a fucking hat trick the other day. It was, what was his name? Fuck, I can't remember the dude's name. Bowen.
Jared Bowen, yeah.
He had a hat trick the other day, which is pretty rare in the Premier League, at least.
Yeah.
And like some of the shittier leagues. Lionel Messi probably has a hat trick every couple of weeks here in the MLS because he's better than everybody else. But that's pretty rare in the Premier League.
Well, the interesting thing about Bowen is that he's not a traditional striker. He's kind of like a winger come forward. Mm. But he's great. I'm actually surprised he hasn't gone to a bigger team. Because he's got everything needed in order to, like,
be... Well, he might be. I mean, fucking Arsenal and Man City every single year are trying to steal anybody's striker that exists.
Yeah.
We'll see. I think Arsenal needs one. Anyways, this isn't a fucking
soccer
show. Yeah,
you're going to go for Ivan Toney.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
So, what parts of the UK are unwoke? Like, Birmingham, probably?
So, the parts, effectively, that are unwoke are the parts where they're rural people... It's very difficult to be woke and have a job where you use your hands, because essentially what woke is a load of ideas which fundamentally don't work in real life.
Right.
So if you are a person who uses your hands, who is connected to reality, then you can't be woke, because if you're a bricklayer, you've got to be grounded in reality, otherwise your wall's going to fall down.
Right.
If you are in construction, if you, you know, a carpenter, if you work using your hands, you can't be woke. It's impossible to be woke.
What do you think it is about, I don't know. I've got theories on this, but our epistemology is under attack, right? And meritocracy as a concept is under attack.
Yeah.
I can't tell if that's just like, I don't know, natural cancer, or if it's something more deliberate. You know, sometimes it seems more deliberate. Like, I'm sure you've heard of Hanlon's razor. There's no need to imply malice when incompetence will suffice. Sometimes that is true. Most of the time, that's true. Actually,
oh, absolutely. It's
but true. There's a lot of this stuff that feels pretty intentional.
Look, I think one of the things that people like to do is they like to attribute intention to certain things that are happening because what it actually does is, it's easier for us to understand if somebody is doing something on purpose and explicitly, because then then you go, right, well, this is an attack. This is how I respond to an attack. I get into a defensive mode, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's far more difficult to engage with something when there is a multitude of different factors that have molded together to create this one particular thing. And I actually think that's what's going on here. I think kids are going to colleges, they're going to these, particularly the elite level colleges, the Ivy League colleges, you know, colleges like Columbia, etc., which are super woke. They've already had left-wing teachers at school telling them what to think and how to think, not necessarily actually how to think, but what to think. They then go to university or college. The same thing applies to them. So what you've got is effectively this glorified brainwashing scheme. The kids then come out. They've been filled with this stuff. And naturally, they're going to regurgitate it. You know, the more we've gone into talking about wokeness or whatever you want to call it, as, you know, Jordan Peterson says, like cultural Marxism, like that, right? The more I feel sorry for young people, because I think, you know, they've been screwed. They've been brainwashed. It's the teachers who are the ones that we should actually be dealing with, not the kids. Because the whole point of going to school is that you get taught. You listen to what the teachers are saying, and then you then apply it in the lesson and in the outside world. And if these teachers are telling you that white people are evil and there's no such thing as, you know, sex, blah, 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 you can be gay at the age of three or whatever it is, then you go, that's not the kid's fault. It's the fault of the adult.
Yeah, I've got a big problem with, and I say this a lot, we have this tendency to talk shit about the younger generation. And that's always the case, right? Everybody's always like, fucking kids.
Yeah.
But these days, it's like, I don't know if this generation is going to survive, which we're like mapping some pretty nasty shit onto these folks and blaming them, younger millennials and Gen Z. But we made them, right? Like it's kind of the premise of this show. It's like you got to take some responsibility for something at some point. And you can't be a parent or a leader or even somebody that just is a functional person in society and blame the people that came after you mm-hmm. without taking a little bit of responsibility for that, right?
Of course. Of course. If you mollycoddle, and you know, Jonathan Haidt talked about mm-hmm. this, obviously. But if you mollycoddle kids to the point that they become little entitled narcissists whose only modus operandi is self-aggrandization and, you know, it's in this narcissistic way to live, then to a certain degree, that is your fault. You raise them like that. You then can't turn around and complain that you've created this monster and all of a sudden this monster is rampaging around society behaving like a monster. And if you think about it as well, you then put social media on top of it. Social media where people are encouraged, they're optimized, and also as well, they're given a platform to be a narcissist.
Yeah.
And if you're a particular type of narcissist who can, how can I put this, game the system effectively enough, they can do very well out of it financially. Mm. Why wouldn't they do that? Yeah, people respond to incentives.
It's very interesting. Yeah, we've optimized for dopamine instead of serotonin, right?
Yeah.
So we've optimized for the short-term hit. And I can see it all around, man. It's like some tragedy will happen and there's a race to see how quickly I can make it about me, right? Somebody dies, they're like, oh man, here's how that affected me. Like, I don't give a fuck how it affected you. If you're a member of their family, like direct member of their family or a close friend, but it's like, anytime a celebrity dies, people just try to find a picture of themselves with that celebrity and pose it. Like, oh, I knew that guy. It's like, okay, well, I don't fucking care. That's a weird thing to do, to be honest. And that narcissistic method of handling people or projecting narcissism onto them, self-aggrandizement, whatever you want to call it, is a huge issue for people's mental health. And it touches everything. I think I do a lot of work in the veteran suicide space, and this is something I talk about a lot. And it kind of folds in what Haidt and Lukianoff had to say in Calling the American Mind, but healing means service for most people, right? Like if you can turn your pain and suffering into empathy for other people, you can save your life and their life.
It's what AA is based on.
Yeah. Gandhi says, if you want to find yourself, lose yourself in the service of others. Like these are, you can find this specific idea all the way back to the Stoics 3,000 years ago or so. And it's nothing new, right? So when we have a guy, let's just say the prototypical veteran who comes back from military service into the West and, you know, their life has been defined by purpose to a very extreme level, right? For a very long time. And then you kind of remove, we've made our way down the rabbit hole to some degree. You know, we got past just the trope of the dude holding his dead friend or whatever the fuck, because that's not it. Maybe it's a contributor, but it can't be all of it, because as far as new active suicides go, in active duty military, 33% are people that have never deployed before, right? So it can't just be the combat traumas, we like to call it. But that's how we started. We thought it was that. We thought they were broken and needed a break, so we patted them on the back and told them it's all okay. Well, it's not okay. Mm-hmm. It's not okay to be a little bitch, frankly, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that everybody that has mental health issues is being a bitch, but lying down and crying about it, that is kind of being a bitch, right? And I take that for what it's worth. But what men need, especially when they're struggling through something like that, is the new purpose to focus on. I mean, idle hands are the devil's plaything. This is a quote that's fucking like, I think that's from Shakespeare, right? That's like 700, 600 years old or some shit like that. Fucking, I don't know. 500 years old, 500. It's like, these concepts have been around for a long time, but and I can't tell, like to your point from before, about cause and effect and problems and shit like that for people. It's difficult to see it's difficult to see a problem that doesn't have a clear cause, right? because then you don't want to admit that it's a problem because you don't know how to solve it. And I Absolutely. Think the clearest cause is probably a bad actor or group being responsible yeah. for it, or blame the devil or whatever, right? That's been a pretty common refrain throughout all of human history.
Yeah, and also as well, like I said, it's much easier. And then you get the conspiratorial element of it, where people go, oh, you know who is causing this particular thing? It's them, whoever they are. And the reason people do that, number one, is because it's a simple solution to a complex problem. Mm. And I always talk about this. The vast majority of simple solutions to complex problems are terrible solutions. Because if the problem was so simple, it would have been fixed years ago, number one. Number two is it taps into a very different type of narcissism, which is the conspiratorial narcissism that I don't think people talk about enough. In that, to me, conspiracy theorists are infused with narcissism because they go, oh, do you know all of these problems in the world? Do you know who's got the solution to these problems?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's me. It's yeah. me. You yeah. can't see it because you're stupid.
Yeah.
But I'm so smart that I can see right through all of these things, and I'm the ones with the answers. When the reality is, it's a confluence of factors coming together and creating a perfect storm, which is what we're seeing now, in my opinion.
Isn't that kind of the same archetype as, let's say, a Scientologist or any kind of read-in or cult kind of situation, right? Or religion in general, but I mean, especially to the extreme degree, it's like people and just in ordinary religion, people who think they have magical powers or some shit, because like, no, you don't, dude. Yeah. I'm sorry. Like your faith is important to you, and I appreciate that, and I think it's good for people and culture to have faith.
Absolutely.
But
it is.
You don't have magic powers. You don't have special insight into the universe that nobody else has. The stuff that you're saying, you could read from a fucking Stoic 3,000 years ago. You make it up, right? It's like, where does that come from? It seems to me like it might be a self-defense mechanism against how like fucking complicated and difficult the world can be.
Yeah, because the reality is that you are never going to be able to figure out life. What is happening in the world, you are never going to be able to figure it out. I always think this when I see even very intelligent people talking about the nature and the existence of God. Mm. I think God, if they exist or it exists or whatever it may be, is so far beyond our ability to comprehend it that it is an act of futility to actually talk about God. A human being trying to understand God is like a cat trying to understand the taxation system. Mm. You just can't do it. It's never going to be able to understand it, number one. And I think number two, and this ties in with the woke aspect of it, wokeness is a religion. And to me, it's a conspiracy theory. Because if you think what woke people say, oh, it's the patriarchy who are in charge of everything. Well, how is that different to people going, it's the Jews in charge of everything?
Yeah, or the devil or whatever,
the devil or the Illuminati. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. This, you know, this group of powerful men who sit down together and then create this world that we inhabit where we are completely powerless and people of color are subjugated and so are women. You go, that's just a conspiracy theory. Mm. Oh, the only difference is now it's a conspiracy theory that a lot of high-up people say that they believe.
Yeah, that's been the relationship between the patrician class and the plebs throughout all of human history, though, right? Mm. The patrician class weaponizes whatever it can, its wealth, power, and the media, I guess you could call it, even if it's just the town crier back in the day. They weaponize all these things to try to convince a plurality or a majority of people to agree that they've been like you. If I'm the king and somebody offends me, I'm like, they're offending your king. You don't say they're offending the king. You say they're offending your king. Like, oh, well, fuck them. Right.
Yeah.
But I don't really care about the king. Right.
Yeah.
So why should I even care about that? This has always been the relationship between the ruling class and ordinary people. And somehow we still in 2024, despite all the shit that's happened, right? Like, and when I say all the shit, I mean like from the Magna Carta, the French Revolution, our revolution, and the past couple of years where these things have been under attack to some degree, we still don't get it.
Yeah.
We still don't understand that it's not black versus white, man versus woman, even rich versus poor most of the time. It is people in power versus people who have none. Right.
Yeah.
And it's always going to be like that. But I just don't. I've tried really hard to communicate that for years now, because every couple of years we kind of the Overton window changes to some degree, or we change how we divide ourselves into groups or whatever, but it's always the same concept is always there. And it's never, it's, we've never gotten it right. Like there've been populist movements before that have been somewhat successful, but they almost always get captured by some asshole leader or another, right?
Of course.
From the far right, I don't mean far right.
Yeah.
From the right side, it was Trump. From the left side, it was Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the populist movements have been Bat Mussolini, Hitler. Like, there have been really bad examples. I don't think Bernie Sanders is a bad dude or Trump's a bad dude necessarily. Mm-hmm. But there have been super bad examples. And then there have been incompetent examples. Mm-hmm. But they always, I guess, the passion of the movement always gets captured by some asshole, some lightning rod at the top. It very rarely turns into group activity for some reason.
You know what's, it's very interesting that you talk about this, because this is actually reflected in music. If you take, for instance, the punk movement, which was anarchic, it was nihilistic, it was very countercultural, it was very anti, you know, anti-authority. If you think about particularly, I'm talking about British punk as opposed to American punk, where you had the
like
Sex
Pistols and shit, yeah.
Yeah, we had the Sex Pistols, God Save the Queen, a fascist regime. And that, considering it came out in 1979, was truly deeply shocking. Mm. But after a while, you know, punk then became co-opted by the mainstream. They took certain symbols and that got absorbed into mainstream fashion. And then the music got defanged and then that got co-opted. And then you got sort of soft punk and it became pop punk and all the rest of it. I think that's just what happens naturally, and that you have these movements and they're bubbling away on the fringes and then they start to get more and more popular and then they get co-opted into the mainstream because people start to see, okay, number one, there's something going on here. Number two, you know, that we can make money off this. And number three, we can take this and create something else and then we can harness it for our own ends.
Yeah, so it basically goes through committee.
Yeah.
Right? So I guess the question is, when you have a righteous cause, how do you get it through committee? And it's you know, at least in a fashion that somewhat resembles the original idea, because it very rarely happens, right?
Yeah.
I don't know how to do that, to be honest. And maybe you can't. Like, we talked about this on Drinker Bros, but no system of government scales indefinitely. It can't, how could it? Why should we even expect it to, right?
And without, why would you want it to?
Yeah, without authoritarianism, it can't scale indefinitely, right? Which means a government that works for, you know, 1 million people probably won't work for 100 million people, which is why in the United States we have federalism, right? Which is the 9th and 10th amendments of the Constitution return all power not enumerated in the Constitution back to the states, right? The least amount of people voting on something as possible is going to, each person is going to be represented more, right? So if I vote in the general election, federal election in 2024, which I will, my vote will count one out of like 180 million or so.
Yeah.
Now that's not precise because there's an electoral college and shit, but let's just say for the sake of raw numbers, that's the case. If I vote in Texas, it's more like one out of 20 million, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like my vote is now 9 times stronger than it was before. And then in a local election, quite a bit stronger than that, right? That's kind of the reason we set things up this way. But even that doesn't scale indefinitely, right? Like you have to, we tend, which is, this is insane to me because no structure in nature will ever work this way. We always tend to add weight to the top and not the bottom, right? Like that doesn't make any sense. Every solid structure we know, physical or other social, like either way, it's strongest at the base or it doesn't work. But now in all of the West, we keep building, it's like Jenga. We're just taking pieces off the bottom and put them on the top. Mm. And we're like in this wobbling society now. And I don't know how long it's going to persist like that.
The problem is, and we touched on it on the other show, which is we're at a place now where in the UK, I'm going to use this as an example because this is the example I know best. The ruling party are the Conservatives, and they got elected in 2019 with a huge majority, one of the biggest ever majorities in a general election. They decimated the Labour Party, who were practically wiped out. Their lowest election result since, I think, 1932.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And you look at what the Conservatives have done with that mandate, with that political mandate, nothing. They've done nothing. They were told by the public that they wanted immigration lower. Immigration last year, it was 700,000 net. So that includes people leaving. And that doesn't include also illegal immigration, which I think was 40,000 or 50,000, something along those lines. And you go, right, what you are now doing is you are subverting democracy. Mm-hmm. Because people have elected you. They have told you what they want. You have promised to give it to them, and then you refuse. And then you haven't done it. So people are quite rightly asking, well, what's the point?
Well, what is the point?
I don't know.
I mean...
And bear in mind, I've lived in Venezuela. I've seen the alternatives.
Yeah.
So it's not like I'm, you know, some reactionary dickhead here who's going, yeah, you know, I want a, you know, a truly libertarian way of life or whatever it is. You know, let's overthrow the government, any of that crap. No. But you asked me that question. I don't have a legitimate answer for you. Mm. And that's worrying.
Well, it's, you know, I made the point that any of these movements always have some kind of chief focal point or another. In Argentina, Javier Milei is doing okay, it seems like, right?
Esquerrita de la mierda!
Yeah, I mean, he kind of stole Austin Powers' look, which, you know, whatever. I guess Mike Myers kind of stole that as well because he's Canadian and not English. But, yeah, he's the first elected politician that I've ever seen do what he said he was going to do. We'll see how it works, right? But he took the government from 24, agencies down to 9 agencies within the first couple months. And they turned, I think, a $650 million profit. Like they had a budget surplus in January of $650 million, which is, you know, that's not that much money for a big country, but that's better than 10 times the opposite way, which is what California is. They're $65 billion in debt.
I still don't understand how California are in so much debt when they're what, the 8th biggest economy in the world?
Yeah, well, I'm sure there are many factors, and I would have to look up the exact number, but I think they lost $4 billion just to during COVID to fake loans and to unemployment insurance paid to convicts, people that were in prison. I think it was about $4 billion total just from that.
Do you know, when I was growing up, I'm 41, so I grew up in the 80s and the early 90s being a kid. I used to watch these movies, Beverly Hills Cop or whatever it was, and I remember watching it and seeing Eddie Murphy in L.A. when he was going there from, I think, Detroit. Mm-hmm. And he was driving down the road. And I thought to myself, wow, that's paradise. That's where I want to be. And now, I think if people went and saw L.A., particularly certain parts of it, they'd think it's a hellscape.
Yeah. Yeah, it's rough.
And it's not even that long ago. You go, oh, the 80s was a long time ago. It was only around 30 years ago, whatever it was. 40 years, that's not a huge amount of time.
No, it's not. And it's, but you know, LA was good, let's say 2006 or so, whenever Schwarzenegger was there, it got good again. Gray Davis kind of fucked it up, but it got kind of good again under Arnold.
Yeah.
And then up until, what would you say, 2015, 2012 to 2015, during that period, it kind of started to get fucked again. And it's always the same stuff, right? It's always the same nonsense that causes those downfalls to happen. It's like, well, we've gotten to a point, and this is reflective of broader society as well. The people in charge are, well, we've gotten to a point where we don't have to worry about these lower level. We don't have to worry about crime and like property crime and safety anymore. We don't have to worry about homelessness anymore. We're good on all that stuff. So we're going to start, you know, focusing our attention on more social issues, which is always a problem. The state should have no involvement in that whatsoever. Yeah. Society will figure that out. That's social society. That's how it works. Leave them the fuck alone. Let them figure it out, right? If some dude doesn't want to sell cakes to gay people, that's fine.
Yeah.
Go start a gay bakery down the street and make money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like at least half of the people in that area are going to want to work with you and not him. So you've taken market share. Congratulations. That it always works that way. But in the same way that our like structural or our infrastructure loses sight of these really important things. We also do that in broader culture. Like I mentioned the Stoics a couple of times. It seems like every 100 years or so, we have this reawakening. Like, oh, remember Marcus Aurelius and Seneca? Yeah. Like, yeah, dude. Yeah. They're like, yeah, I remember. Like, why have we not been doing this whole time? Why? What made you think that this wisdom that has persisted over thousands of years isn't still relevant in your life today? I mean, we just don't live principled lives anymore. And it's so much, I think it's so much easier to do it. Like you said before, if you're working with your hands, if there are existential threats to your actual life, you become principled very quickly.
Of course.
It's what they're there's no other way to do it because that's the only way that works. So I still don't understand why human beings don't have the common sense to be like, all right, it seems like every time things go wrong, we go back to this style. So why don't we just do that?
Do you know, it's because, and I'm a great believer in this, and it's to go back to that point I made about working with your hands. We can afford to have terrible ideas because we are so detached from the natural world that actually we can live in this world of make-believe where we sit on laptops, where we debate retarded ideas like defunding the police. And it doesn't make any impact on us, particularly if you're wealthy, particularly if you live in a gated community, because you are never going to see the real world impact of these ideas. Whereas if you're poor, if you work with your hands, if you are connected to the real world, you are going to see the impact of a defunded police force pretty quickly.
Yeah, I don't think...
But if you live in a gated community in Pacific Palisades, you're never going to see it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, so about a year into the defund bullshit, some polling companies went into Oakland, which is where I used to live. Right?
Yeah.
Now, I lived in Piedmont, which is a nice area of Oakland, but Oakland itself is fucked.
Mm-hmm.
And they ask ordinary people... They did the same thing in New York, by the way. I don't know what the stats were, though, so I can't talk about that. But in Oakland, they asked people whether they wanted more police, the same amount of police, or less police. And the residents of 83% of the residents of Oakland said the same amount or more. 83%. That's an overwhelming majority.
And I bet those 83% have never had a criminal conviction. They're good, law-abiding, decent people who just want to go to work, raise a family. And then the other 17% are, you know, whatever they are.
Assholes.
Yeah.
Yeah. More, pretty much. I mean, 20% of any group is assholes.
Yeah.
So that tracks, right?
Or nuts.
Yeah. But I, you know, there is a part of it that is, and this is where toxic empathy for me comes in. And it dovetails with, like, the subtle racism of lowered expectations and shit like that. Like, this idea that... the left in America believes black people just can't figure out how to get an ID or hire an attorney or start a business. Like, really? That's what you really think that, right?
Yeah.
Go to the hood right now and ask people that have jobs. Do you have an ID? Cause you can't get a fucking job without one.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, yeah, they all have IDs. What are you talking about? So why exactly are you pushing this voter ID stuff? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, that's racist. Like, no, it's not. They have ID. They can figure it out. It's racist to assume they can't, right?
Of course.
To me, that's extremely toxic empathy in one way. And then another way is to tell people constantly that they are victims and that no matter what they do, they can't succeed without help, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is basically true for everybody.
Yeah.
Nobody succeeds without help, right? But telling someone over and over that America doesn't work for them, they will start to believe it.
Of course.
And then they'll start to operate in parallel economies like gangs, drugs, shit like that. It's where the Italian mafia came from, right?
Yeah.
It's always happened like that through all of human history. So one of your guys, G.K. Chesterton, used to say that men didn't love Rome because she was great. Rome was great because the men had loved her, right? Yeah. So the idea of patriotism isn't about blindly following whatever your country says. It's about, this is where I live. I'm going to make it the best possible place to live, right?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
We reached that point kind of in the 90s where there was still a high level of American exceptionalism, but not a lot of effort towards that end. I think in the 90s is where it happened. And then once 9/11 happened and the Iraq war and all that bullshit started, it kind of like people started to wake up to it a little bit. But I feel like they left some cards on the table. I really feel like they threw the baby out with the bathwater. They said, oh, America is not for me anymore, right? I'm going to kneel during the anthem, or I'm going to burn a flag or whatever. It's like, if no, dude, you make it better. That's your job, to make it better, not to fucking tear down the place you live. What kind of asshole does that? It's like the door breaks, your front door breaks somehow, and you just, your reaction to that is to bust out all the windows too. Like, fuck this place. It doesn't make any goddamn sense. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It doesn't, because...
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What they're doing is they have the narrative of the revolutionary, which is, we are going to have a revolution, we're going to tear down society, and we're going to create something better in its place. Now, I have some very real issues with this. As somebody who has seen a revolution in front of my eyes in Venezuela, where we went from capitalism to communism. Number one, I'd say to those people, you have no idea what you're talking about. You've never seen a revolution. You've never experienced it. Revolutions are not things that you want to live through, number one. And number two, what makes you think that this system that you are going to put in its place is going to be in any way better? You are always going to have hierarchies. Human beings are hierarchical beings. We always have been. We always will be. It is literally coded into us to have hierarchies. So this idea that we're going to somehow create this utopia where we're not going to have an hierarchy, it's complete insanity. It's nonsense. And to the people who actually believe that, you are delusional. You are delusional. And what is going to happen is you're going to take apart a society that works. It is unfair. It's got problems. I'm not denying that. And you are going to create something in its place that is far, far worse. And this happened in 2020 when the whole BLM thing, and I was very against the BLM organization because I have seen what happens when you abolish capitalism. Right. I've seen it. It's not a good idea, believe me. It's not a good idea. And these are people as well who supported Maduro, who is the dictator in charge of Venezuela. Mm. And I actually said to my ex, you know, who's a lovely person, she was going, is this a hill you're going to die on? Because you were going to alienate a lot of people by coming out. And I said, yeah, it is. Because it's an insult to my family members who lived through a cultural revolution in Venezuela where these ideas were allowed to propagate and destroy society. So yes, number one, I will do. But I remember saying to someone who was like, oh, I'm pro-BLM and blah, 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 let's defund the police. And I said to him, you do not understand the forces that you are messing with. You don't get it. You've lived in a nice Western liberal society where there's democracy. You haven't seen the ugly side of it. And they don't understand what they're doing. They don't understand the forces they're messing with. They don't understand what they're dealing with. And believe me, it's only when you've opened that metaphorical Pandora's box and the demons are allowed to roam free that you realize what you've actually done. And by then, unfortunately, it will be too late. That was a bit negative, wasn't it?
No, I mean, it's, you know, fire's hot. Don't touch it. That's not negative. That's just a fucking fact, to be honest. And you guys went from, well, you guys say you guys, but, you know, I guess it's your mom's side of the family, kind of went from Caldera to Hugo Chavez, and things got fucking weird. I mean, Caldera getting elected in the first place was kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
I think it was the first peaceful transfer of power in the 21st century, right, for Venezuela.
Yeah.
And that was in 99, maybe, or something?
No, 99, Chavez came to power.
94.
Yeah, 94 would have been Caldera. Yeah,
so, like, Caldera. It was 94 until there was a peaceful transfer of power in the country, and it only lasted for one or two terms, technically, but only for 5 years, technically. That's not great. But you mentioned the people don't understand the ugly side of this. What do you mean by that? Like, what is the ugly side? I know resource scarcity is always going to be part of it because the government in that kind of situation is designed specifically to extract labor and wealth from people, right? And you have to, and same with all forms of government, in my opinion. Yeah. I don't like government, but that it's quite a bit worse in these situations, obviously.
The way I would describe it is like this. There is a thin, paper-thin veneer of respectability that covers society and all of our social interactions and the way that we behave. Once that is ripped off, then you are going to see the ugly side of humanity, where if there is no rule of law, then why can't I go up to you, shoot you, and take your laptop? Why can't I do that? Why can't I then, you know, go into your house, take everything that I want, kill you? Because I need it for my family. My family need to eat. They can't eat, so why can't I do that? If there are no consequences for my actions and the strongest person wins, and by strongest, I mean the person who is most physically dominant and the one who doesn't have any morals,
right,
then why aren't they going to do what they're going to do? And once that happens, society descends into chaos. And once it descends into chaos, it's very difficult to get it back. And the weakest in society, and these people always talk about protecting the weak and the vulnerable and whatever else, which I actually believe in. I believe that we should like protect vulnerable people. But they're the first ones who are going to suffer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. One of my big research projects in my master's degree on homeland security is international security, was energy security, right? Like if the United States energy grid goes down, 3 million people die in the first month.
Yeah.
Old people, babies, whatever the fuck, right? People that just don't have access to stuff.
And people on ventilators, all of that. Yeah. People in hospitals.
Within 18 months, about half of the population is dead.
Yeah.
Because of sanitation, mostly.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, that's an extreme example, but it is always the case. So I hate when anytime anything happens, MSNBC and CNN were like, oh, but this is really going to hurt black communities. Like, yeah, probably. I mean, any community that's particularly vulnerable to anything, it's going to hurt old people too, right? It's always going to be worse for them. But that doesn't mean that we have to engineer society to just focus on that group of people. Let's solve the fucking problem instead.
Of course.
Right? What the fuck? Like, it doesn't... And I guess it goes back to that, you know, thing you mentioned at the beginning, that it's just like... It's a lot easier to find a boogeyman for something than it is to actually solve problems. And I think a big reason, one of the reasons for that is definitely that a simple problem to a complex, or a simple solution to a complex problem is very attractive. But I think another part of it is kind of like the bystander effect. It's a lot easier to fucking walk past that piece of garbage on the ground than it is to stop and pick it up.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's also what ties into that as well. It's far easier to see behaviors that are destructive and that we all know are destructive and detrimental, not only to society, but also to the people around that person and also to the person as well, and just walk away and go, blah, 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 make excuses, excuses, excuses. And then that behavior is allowed to carry on unchecked. When actually, if we had more of a communitarian approach, and we're more prepared to step in and go, hey, don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a good thing to do. Then actually our society would be better as well.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's when a critical mass of people enforce principles, then they stay enforced, right?
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of Game of Thrones where King Robert's like, what's stronger, 5 or 1? It's like 5, 1, right? I mean, that's a pretty, that's something that we teach in military schools as well. It's like your strength in numbers is always going to be more powerful than any weapon you can develop.
Of course.
You know what I mean? And it works like, I guess in this way, it's not really a weapon, but the collective act of saying no to something is extremely powerful. Nonviolent no's are extremely powerful in society. And we saw two versions of it over the past 3 years, one where it didn't happen and one where it did. And the results were very clear. The first one was, lockdowns, right?
Yeah.
That should have been an immediate no. No, we're not locking down schools. Fuck you. This is stupid. Don't care. Fuck you. Yeah. Don't do it. But we didn't do that. We're like, oh, fucking, maybe they're right.
Yeah.
They're never right. Never. But we allowed it. And all the negative downstream effects from that. One, the infrastructure to lock down is now in place and the precedent is set, but also the damage it did to businesses. I think 800,000 businesses in the United States closed and will never reopen because of that. That's 800,000 family businesses, by the way, because big businesses didn't shut down at all.
No, and in fact, they made money.
Quite a bit more, yeah.
Like the Amazons grew hugely as a result.
And then kids on average lost 2 to 3 years of development.
Yep.
Educational development, which is a huge fucking problem that we're not going to notice for another 10 years, right?
And also as well, and this is, as somebody who taught for many, many years, this is what people don't understand. So you always have this hardcore of school refusers. Kids who just refuse to go to school or truants or whatever else. You always get that. You always have it. You always will. That the number of school refusers in the UK has literally doubled after the pandemic. It's literally doubled. That's tragic. Those for working class, blue collar kids, the only real way, okay, you're going to have some who make it in the arts and sport, but that amount of that, they're negligible. They're negligible. That's a tiny percentage of the population. The rest of them, the only chance they have of improving their lives is education. And that's been robbed. They've been robbed of it because of this.
Yeah,
it's heartbreaking.
The education and then the socialization part as well, right?
Yeah.
Like the pipeline. I don't know if you've done any research on this or not, but what they call the prison pipeline in school systems in the inner cities across America, they are marked by this. By kids who, for one reason or another, because of family troubles or because of legal troubles, are now 2 or 3 years behind their peers. And they're like, well, you're just getting socially promoted now because we don't want a 16-year-old in a class with a bunch of 13-year-olds, right? Mm-hmm. So you get socially promoted and you graduate high school without ever having really learned how to read properly, right? That's a big issue. Now, these are all really obvious negative effects from capitulation, right? What did Churchill say? Appeasement is feeding the crocodile hoping he eats you last.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, fuck that shit. But then there's a good version of this too. I don't know if you recall, because it was primarily an American thing, but the Disinformation Governance Board. Do you remember that?
No.
It was a censorship group inside of Homeland Security that Mayorkas was trying to stand up, and they hired this middle-aged white woman. Shocking. That was a fucking disinformation expert, whatever the fuck that means. Yeah. She didn't work in the intelligence community. I am a disinformation expert. I've worked in the intelligence community before. But her job was to do what Schellenberger and Taibbi and all these guys exposed.
Yeah.
What they were doing was direct social media companies to censor people and put people on watch lists and all kinds of other crazy shit. And everybody in the United States was like, nope, we're not doing that. Fuck that shit. Because they had had enough, right? They'd had enough of everything. And this was from the right and the left. Everybody was just like, nah, that doesn't seem like a good idea. I feel like there's a couple of books about this. You know what I mean? And it was shut down within a matter of months entirely. That woman was fired. Right now, she works for a foreign government. Actually, I think she works for your government. If I'm not mistaken.
Fuck! Of course she does. Yeah. Of course she does. Why wouldn't she? Why would she not?
I'm pretty sure she works.
Yeah. You said that, and I'm just like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that checks. That reads. God. I don't even know if it's true, but yeah, she probably does.
Nina Jankowicz is her name.
Yeah, she's probably in charge of a huge department.
I'm almost positive. Let me check it real quick. Almost positive she works for the fucking English people now.
Yeah.
Fuck, I don't know, I have to look.
You know, there were so many people during the pandemic that I'm not someone who believes in the death penalty, but if I've got low blood glucose, I'm like, yes, we should kill them. You know, and one of them is, I can't remember this guy's name, but he was one of the head government advisors. And in an interview with the Times of London, you know what he said? China made us realize what was possible when it came to lockdowns. Now, have a think about that. Just let that marinate in your brain. China made us realize what was possible. A communist authoritarian regime that maintains its rule through intimidation, fear, and murder made us realize what was possible. And then you go, oh, that to me was the mask slipping. And this was in April 2020. I can't remember this guy's name, Neil something or other. He ended up, right, and this was something else. He ended up breaking lockdown rules. You know why? Because he wanted to go out and get fucking laid.
Yeah.
Okay, so you obviously knew that this virus wasn't that big a deal. We're not talking about airborne Ebola here.
Yeah.
We're talking about a virus which could affect, seriously, a small percentage of the population and had side effects for others, right?
Yeah.
Okay, fair. But you obviously didn't think it was that big a deal. Yet you talked earlier on about how China made you aware of what was possible. And then you look at these people and you go, oh, you're an authoritarian. That's what you are. Yeah. That is all this is. And for you, this is just a glorified power grab so that you can feed yourself and you can feel like you are in control.
That's what it's always been, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so I have buddies who are, and I love having them on, although the conversations always just get so crazy and, like, specific. But they're, like, one of my friends, Jeremy Slate, is an expert on the Roman Empire, like the entirety of it, right?
Yeah.
Which is well beyond this trope of two dudes in a room talking about the Roman Empire, right? But this is how all systems of government go from, you know, some version of a republic to some version of an empire at some point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because power centers grow and people don't want to give up power once they've been given it. That's just how it works. By the way, she works for the Center for Information Resilience, CIR, in the UK. And their stated aim is to, quote, combat gendered abuse and disinformation online.
Of course it comes in with trans stuff. Why wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Gendered abuse and climate change, is it? Something like that? Have they fused
I'm sure that's part of it. What they say is gendered abuse and disinformation, but yeah, I'm sure climate change is part of it. I mean, that's like, that's one of my favorite ones. Have you guys had Alex Epstein on the show?
No, we haven't had Alex on.
You really need to have him on. I mean, just to like, you have, what percentage of your audience is?
40%.
40% is British?
Less than that, I would say. It's about 40% American. Mm. Slightly, around, let's say 40% British.
I think they could stand to hear it,
yeah,
to be honest. Like, this idea that we're running out of fossil fuels is nonsense. We will never run out of fossil fuels. That's retarded. Now, we should be working on solar because the sun is big as fuck.
Yeah.
Right? But be honest about it. We talked about it the other day. It's like the cobalt and lithium being pulled out of the ground is causing the same wars and the same pollution, right, that oil did. What's the fucking difference? It's just a new, same, but not.
And what about different. The kids working in the cobalt mines?
Yeah. You don't see a whole lot of children working in the oil fields.
No.
Frankly, right? Even in the Middle East, you don't see children working in the oil fields because the rigs are too big for them to operate.
Exactly.
I mean.
Because they're weak.
Yeah. Fucking bitch-ass kids.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like that. That's another example of how people could just say no. And I think they have. In the market, they've said no. And now the market is starting to shift in a lot of ways. And it's happening not just energy. So Apple announced their electric car program is scrapped.
Yeah.
Mercedes announced that their deadline of 2030 is scrapped. They're not doing that anymore. A couple of, like, one other major car company scrapped their EV line altogether and went back to hybrid. Let's see. What's the other one? Victoria's Secret is using hot girls again instead of fatties.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, they announced, like, oh, we're going to go back to more traditional standards of beauty. Like, you mean standards of beauty, not just morbidly obese chicks in fucking bikinis, because nobody wants to see that shit.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a small percentage of people who are into that, but they should be shamed out of it, you know.
Let's
be fair.
That to me is predatory. If you're into fat chicks, that's predatory, because you're asking this woman to build up visceral fat around her organs and die young just so you can fucking,
pound off. Yeah, and plus, she's not going to be able to run away.
Well, that's
you know,
fair enough.
So you're physically trapping them.
Unless she's a hippo.
Yeah.
They're big and they move fast as shit. Have you ever seen a hippo moving through water?
Oh, man, they're one of the fastest land animals.
Yeah, that's fucked, isn't it?
Yeah, they're the most dangerous land animal as well.
You know,
don't fuck with a hippo, man.
One of our guys from Border Patrol was in here yesterday. And apparently the Chapitos, which is El Chapo, like Guzman's kids, he's got three kids. They're called the Chipitos, which is really funny, by the way. It's like Alvin, Simon, Theodore. But they have a zoo right across the border, and you can see it. It's like fucking 200 feet across the border. They've got lions and tigers and hippos and all kinds of crazy shit right there. And apparently the zookeepers are always trying to invite the border guys over to come check it out. Like, hey, you want to come pet the tiger? Like, no, dude, I don't want to pet your wild-ass tiger.
Yeah.
Fuck, I don't even know what I was talking about right there.
No.
Hippos, man.
Yeah.
Why is it that so many communist leaders have mustaches?
Why is it that some – that is a good question. I don't know. I don't know.
Like, Chavez didn't, but Maduro's got a fucking – he's got a Stalin-esque, I think, you know.
Yeah. You know, I met Chavez.
Oh, really? How was that?
Yeah. I saw him do a speech in London. Like, a friend of a friend basically said to me, I mean, this is how badly this thing was organized. She said to me, do you want to do security, right, for Chavez's, like, speech that he did? So I went to see him do a speech. He's the most charismatic man I've ever seen, on a par with Mick Jagger when it comes to charisma on stage. And his speech was absolutely bollocks. There was literally nothing in it. He just talked and rambled for ages. And just said nothing whilst the crowd went wild. And it's such a powerful lesson. We go, actually, it doesn't matter what you say. You just have to say it with conviction.
Mm.
That's all you need to do. You need to be charismatic. You need to be say a few things. And the rest of it, that's fine. And you'll take a lot of people with you.
Yeah, I mean, Trump does that pretty well.
Yeah, he does.
He says some stuff that's like, all right, well, that's weird, but I like your enthusiasm. You know
I've got this theory that basically the reason Venezuelans and Cubans love Trump is that Trump is a Latin American politician.
I can see that for sure. Yeah.
You know, like,
he's got the flair.
He's got the flair. He comes out. He's profane. He's rude. He says outrageous things. He has sex with porn stars. You know, he's got loads of different women that he's had sex with. And he's pretty open about it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny with Malay, the Western press tried to give him the business for being out there doing threesomes and fucking whores and shit like that. But nobody in Argentina, like, the Argentina press didn't even cover that. They're just like, yeah, we don't fucking care about that.
Yeah, they're like, we fuck whores too, man. Yeah. What's the problem?
Have you seen our meteorologists? Yeah. None of them are qualified.
Yeah. Like, you know, to a Latin American, if you say your president was involved in a threesome, they'd be like, good. He's doing what a man should do.
Yeah.
Provided it's two women.
Yeah, fair enough, yeah. That's a good point. Is there anything going on in, I guess, in Western culture and politics, US, UK, that gives you hope right now?
Yeah, there's always, I always think that I really, one thing that I find really frustrating is that on this podcast circuit, and to a certain extent, we're all guilty of it, where it's the doom mongering. There are certain podcasts that are too huge, where I'm not going to mention names, where people just go on and they just go, oh, there's going to be a revolution in America. And then there's a collective spate of mutual masturbation where they all talk about how doomed everything is. I think the reality is that conditions are never optimal. You're always going to have challenges. You're always going to have things that are going well. I think this is a tough moment, but I believe and I hope that we can turn it around, because the vast majority of people want it to turn around. It's just this small minority. But I think that people are starting to become awake. I think that people are realizing that this is unsustainable and that we can't carry on like this, and that you need to start having open and honest conversations. And I think the old tropes and the old weapons that people use of sexist, racist, transphobic, which, let's be fair, a lot of the times, not all of the time, but a lot of the times are merely tools used to shut down a conversation, are no longer working. You can only use the word racist so many times before people go, dude, that doesn't mean anything. Far right doesn't mean anything, which actually is a very dangerous place to be in, because there are racists and there is a very, very tiny percentage of people who are still far right.
Yeah.
And those words matter and they're important. But I think that tool of getting people to be silenced and shut them down, and I don't think that's working anymore. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the doomsayers, I guess, it's only going to get worse is a common phrase. Like, well, if you think that way, then yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But Gandhi, another Gandhi quote that I really like is, every revolution begins with a single act of defiance,
yeah.
Right? That's like why saying no, and then saying no is the first part, and then taking responsibility for the surroundings are the second part.
Right? Yeah.
It's like, if the government, the state, or powerful forces of any kind, corporate or otherwise, come around and nobody has their hand out, they don't have any power there, right?
Yeah.
So my, you know, what I try to tell people all the time is solve problems before those assholes get there.
Yeah.
If your neighbor needs help, help them, right?
Yeah.
And don't let anyone outside your community or outside your family come between you and somebody in your community or your family. That is retarded.
Yeah.
To let some jackass on TV split you and your buddy up is fucking retarded, especially over shit that doesn't affect you. Now, I'm sympathetic to human life in general, especially innocent human life. And what's happening in the Middle East sucks. What happens in Israel and Gaza sucks. But that should have no bearing on your personal relationships with people in the United States of America. That is fucking retarded that you would even allow that to happen. I mean, what the fuck, man? Like, this dude's setting himself on fire. You were a U.S. service member. You signed a document swearing your oath of allegiance to our country, not to some other assholes. You know what I mean? And by the way, whatever you think about Israel or Gaza or Hamas or Hezbollah or Iran or anybody else, it is perfectly reasonable not to take a side in a fight between two assholes sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can just say, yeah, not my fight. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was doing a routine on this, which actually saw me get booed in this comedy club.
Of course, there was, yeah. If you can pull off an Israel-Palestine joke right now, you're doing good work, I think.
Yeah. And basically the premise of it is, you know, why do we have to pick a side on everything? Mm. Why can I be non-binary when it comes to my gender, but not when it comes to, you know, the Israel-Palestine? Why can't I be Middle Eastern fluid? You know, and the people got so angry.
Where was this?
This was in a comedy club. I don't want to mention it because it's a great comedy club, and it was just like the group of people at the time. But it was a new material night, so people came along, and that was like a bit that I was trying to work out. And people got so angry, and I'm going, my grandfather is from Lebanon.
Mm.
So I could say, oh, I've got a horse in this race, which I don't have a horse in the race. But people feel that they need to get involved in every single thing. I need to be pro-Ukraine. I need to be pro-Palestine. I need to be pro this. I need to be anti this. Or maybe a lot of these issues are incredibly complex. And in order for you to be able to understand them, you need to take some time to read about them and to do some work. And as a result of that, then you're going to come to a position. But here's the thing. I guarantee you, your position will probably be very nuanced. And that is far, far more difficult than putting a Palestine flag in your bio on your Instagram.
Yeah.
Or for chanting from the river to the sea. Because then you have to admit that actually Hamas are not good guys.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought that we would be in that boat? Because it never happened with Al-Qaeda, really.
No.
There was never a debate in the early 2000s like we got to stop bombing fucking Afghanistan because Al-Qaeda is, you know, I mean, they're people too. Like, no, we just wanted to fucking slaughter everybody back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I think this is all based on what culture values, social currency specifically, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how is it that you obtain social currency? It used to come from being an honorable person, being a good man, a good father.
Yeah.
A hard worker, someone who helps their neighbor, someone who upholds the standards, things like that. Now it's whether or not you hold the right political or social positions, which, by the way, cost you nothing.
Yeah.
It costs you nothing at all. And you have no fucking effect on those things either, right? So it is a completely net zero effort.
Yeah.
It's no effort at all, and there's no consequence from the effort. But you still get the same social currency and the same dopamine hit that you would have normally from actually doing something. And that's why no one fucking does anything for real anymore. We've completely lost the relationship between effort and outcome. And we wonder why this next generation and a half ahead of us has no sense of ownership over their country, or no sense of purpose or duty, and no sense of looking beyond the self, right? Because they've maybe even tried to do that. Their version of looking beyond the self now is to put something in their fucking bio or go protest or something like that. Like, no, make the world a better place for people. Protesting doesn't do shit, in my opinion. I think it's retarded. I think it's a complete waste of time, but unless it turns into something real. But yeah, it's like we have the level of effort all happens within our own head now.
Yeah.
And then we get the same amount of praise and social respect. Like, we did this. We built this infrastructure, and now we're living in it.
You know, the thing that I find, and to touch on a previous point of yours, where people allow their relationships, their friendships, to be destroyed over these political issues. If you surround yourself with people who agree with everything that you think, and you refuse to countenance having a friend or a romantic relationship with somebody who thinks differently to you, you're a child. You're a literal child. You are pathetic. You're a pathetic individual and human being. Because what that means is that you are so weak, you can't even have a disagreement with someone.
In your own home, right? Or amongst your own friends. You can't, like, if you're not solid enough in your position, by the way, your position should be prove it. I feel like, because that's like the Socratic method is another one that we seem to have forgotten about. But that is the basis for all education, is the Socratic method. The basis of all science, the basis of all education.
Yeah.
If that's not your guidestone, then you're just lying to yourself, right? That's retarded. I mean, it's like you don't ever really know anything if you're like that.
And it becomes a religious belief.
Yeah.
Trans women are women. Well, okay, we'll prove it. Well, I'm not going to prove it because that's transphobic.
Yeah,
Well, then you go, well, what am I meant to do with that? What am I meant to do with that?
Just start singing Every Sperm is Sacred, I guess, because that's the best parody of that particular version of religion.
Yeah.
It's funny how theater and comedy always are so far ahead of these issues, right? And I'm not trying to blow smoke up the industry's ass or anything like that, but it's always been amazing to me that people like Chappelle was in South Park were years ahead of this.
Mm-hmm.
People like Monty Python were decades ahead of this stupid shit. And then how did Shakespeare stay alive? Like he wrote like play after play that was subversive to the state.
Yeah.
And it was wildly popular, right? Yeah. That's the role. That's why the attacks that were going on, anti-comedy, particularly towards Rogan, but a lot of other people, were so nefarious. Because they like people in power know the power that the industry has, right? That's why they work so hard to capture Hollywood.
Yeah. And it's, you know, when you saw Joe Biden coming out and talking about Rogan.
Yeah. The president of the United States is talking about Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Like, get the fuck out of here,
dude. Number one, have you not got something better to do with your time? And I love Joe, but to talk about a podcaster and a comedian? Come on. Really? With all the problems in America, with the fentanyl crisis, and you're talking about a podcaster? It just shows that, number one, that they're incredibly unserious. And number two, that they see him as a threat. They see him as a legitimate threat. That he will have people on, some of whom I disagree with, some of whom I agree with, to talk about things. And you go, this is worthy of comment from the President of the United States. You're not, this isn't serious.
No, we're not a serious culture anymore.
This is clown world.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's an overused term, but that is clown world.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, we're just not a serious culture anymore. And I like, the British have dealt with this more than the U.S. I guess the U.S. is dealing with it more now than they ever have before. But the attack on culture generally, the colonizer idea, right? Like, well, it's not okay just to be British, right? Which is interesting because all of the Indian and Pakistani people I know that live in England are fucking British.
Yeah.
As British as any fucking white dude that looks like you is, right?
Yeah.
But this latest generation, it's the same thing that's happening here in the States, are people that are moving here not for the opportunity necessarily. They're escaping something, but they don't, they're just coming to some place where they can get away with whatever the fuck they want to do. It's not about building better lives anymore, in my opinion, just based on the what I'm seeing from these people, right?
I think as well, you know, there will always be people who come over and, you know, want to improve themselves and want to contribute. I think the problem is that when you have seen the levels of immigration that we are currently absorbing into our nations, you are always going to get within that a subset of people who, quite frankly, should be nowhere near this country or my country. And I'll give you an example. I'm half Venezuelan. What is going on in Venezuela is a complete tragedy. One of my cousins is a journalist, literally had to flee for his life because he was criticizing the Maduro regime. He had to flee. He now lives in Uruguay. There are Venezuelans who are magnificent people who have had to flee for their lives in order to go to different countries to have it, to try and have some semblance of a normal life. But there are also some Venezuelans who come to the US, and I read about them, who create problems, rape, murder, kill, steal, etc. Those people have no business being in the United States of America. Mm. They have no business being anywhere, particularly America. And if you are into this country illegally, you are breaking the law, you are a criminal, you have no basis to be in that country. It is as simple as that. And you will talk to any person who came to America legitimately, pays their taxes, first generation immigrant, contributes to the society, and they will be far more hardline than any other person.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's weird, man. It's weird how a large subset of our population has dropped the assimilation requirement. That's always kind of been the requirement. You know what I mean? That if you come, like when in Rome, right? That saying is older than our country.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. It's very bizarre to me, honestly. I guess it is just a religion, right? Because it's very, somebody did a research study on this a while back. I think it might have been Nate Silver from 538 about how, like, the same, within 2 percentage points, the same people support BLM and Palestine.
Yeah.
And, but there's no relationship between those two groups, right?
No.
None whatsoever. It's not the same alleged oppressor, not the same alleged victim. But the weirder one was how people that were in favor of mask mandates, lockdowns, and vax mandates were the same group of people that were in support of both of those two causes. Now, that is even farther apart. There is absolutely no relationship between authoritarian measures, medical measures, and fucking somebody being oppressed by the state. As a matter of fact, it's kind of the same issue, but you're on different sides of it, depending on what the issue is. But it's the same group of people that believe both of those things. That's a religion. You're just going down the bullet points. Well, I believe this because this is my group. Like, that's not a reason to fucking believe something, dude.
Well, and here's something that may upset the people listening and viewing this. That is the problem with ideology.
Mm.
I went to the National Conservative. I'm not on the right and I'm not a conservative. And I went to, but I like going to listen. I like going to, I'm a curious person. I like going to listen to left-wing speakers, right-wing speakers, conservatives, because I think that's how you become a more well-rounded individual. You go, oh, I like this idea, I'll take this. I like this idea, I'll take that. And I'll put it together and that becomes my worldview until somebody else, I get introduced to another idea and I drop that or I find that. And that's how the process goes on. And I was sitting next to this member of parliament at dinner and he goes to me, why are you conservative? And I go, I'm not. And he looks at me and he goes, because he's a conservative member of parliament. He's like, you're not conservative? I'm like, no. And he's like, but you're here. And I'm like, so? Why does that make me a conservative? And he's like, but why aren't you a conservative? And I go, because if I'm a conservative, then what that means is I have to download every aspect of that particular ideology into my brain, which then means that I then see the world through that particular prism, which then means that I give up my autonomy and my intellectual autonomy, and I no longer become a fully rounded individual because I'm analyzing the world through a particular system. That is not a way to go through life. And I would much rather, even though it's more difficult, be on my own and make up my own mind than download a woke ideology, a conservative ideology, a libertarian ideology, you know, a left-wing ideology. I don't want any of it. I want to be able to see these systems in front of me and go, okay, so that works, that doesn't, and then I put it together. Because otherwise, all you're doing is you become an automaton to somebody else's way of viewing the world.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, I guess there's more space now for a la carte politics than there has been in the past. But it's notoriously difficult to rally people like that against major power centers, which is a problem, right? I mean, it's a problem that's going to need to get solved at some point. Maybe it'll solve itself, I don't know. But it was, you know, it's also this decentralization is always good. It's like we've, countries didn't always have standing armies. You know what I mean? Like to wage war, you used to have to either convince a bunch of people to fight for you or pay them, right? So you either had to have a good cause or extreme amount of resources.
Yeah.
Now it's just like, we assume that we're going to war. Like the United States having a standing army like we do is fucking insane to me. And I was in the goddamn army. It's wild to me that, you know, we built this because we didn't before World War II. We had there were some units available, but in World War I as well, we stood up a bunch of units for World War I and trained people and sent them off to war. We disbanded most of them, and then we did it again in World War II. And ever since then, a lot of them have just stuck around, right? Because we had to fight the Russians, which I don't know why exactly. Nobody ever really. Like, what do I care if South or North Vietnam wants to be communist? Exactly. Yeah. Explain to me exactly how that affects my American life. You know what I mean? But anyways, Eisenhower warned about this in his farewell speech about the military-industrial complex. But, you know, if you build a machine, you're going to want to use it.
Of course.
Right? So our foreign policy has been driven not by energy security, which is the what it should be driven by in these this day and age for sure, but not by energy security, not by national security, but by, you know, using the fucking machine we created.
It's just a story that I tell on podcasts, but to me it's one of the most powerful stories. It's about my grandfather. My grandfather was a magnificent man called Jack Foster, who left school at the age of 14. Very, very smart, very intelligent man. But he was born into a poor working class family. So he had to leave in order to work when he was 14 to provide for his family. And he emerged into the workforce in the 1930s in the northwest of England in a town called Wigan, made famous by Orwell's book, The Road to Wigan Pier, talking about poverty in that community. It was a mining community. And he used to go to work in Liverpool. And I remember him telling me a story. So he used to go to the docks in Liverpool. There would be hundreds of men there waiting at the gate of the docks, trying to do a day's work. Foreman would come out, look around and go, pick the biggest men, you, the rest of you, fuck off. And then you go home and you've got no money. And that was life. And then, just as he was starting to get ahead, 1930, Hitler rises, comes to power. Then you've got 1939, the British declare war on Germany. And he was, at this point, a master joiner. So a master joiner is the highest level of carpenter that you can be. And he was working in a mosquito factory. And the mosquito was a plane, a fighter plane, made entirely out of wood. And the reason for that is it's more nimble, more quicker, particularly against the Messerschmitt, which was a fantastic fighter plane, but was very heavy and very lumbering. And so my grandfather was somebody who was a vital part of the war effort, but was exempt from going to fight because he was helping to build the mosquito.
Right.
But he was a very bright man and a very intelligent man, and he used to listen to the wireless or the radio, the wireless as it was called then. And he listened to what was happening. He listened to who Hitler was and what he was doing. And he went, I can't, in all good conscience, I cannot let this happen. So even though it was a dangerous job because you were at risk of being bombed, he resigned from the factory. He enlisted in the army. He kissed his wife and his two-year-old daughter goodbye. And he went to fight. And he joined the army. And he fought from the top of Italy right the way down. And then fought in the Battle of El Alamein in North Africa against Rommel's army for Montgomery. He conducted himself brilliantly. And at the end of the war, he was taken aside by his officer and said, "Foster, you are a brilliant soldier. We would like you to stay on." And he refused because he said, "No, this for me was a matter of principle. I don't want a career in the army," even though it would have served him better and he would have had a pension and also and so on and so on. And then he returned to his town to raise a family and go back to being a carpenter. That, to me, is honor, not what we see now.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, how many people would live that life? And that is a man who is not famous. No one will ever hear of him. The only reason he's getting spoken about is because he was my grandfather.
Mm.
But that sense of duty, I don't know if it exists anymore. And that's tragic.
Well, it matters who your heroes are in culture, right?
Yeah.
to that specific point, a standing army without an enemy will find one. And that's a fucking problem.
Yeah.
Right? It's a problem of resources and it's a problem of like foreign policy, national policy. It causes problems where none need exists. But our hero, like we used to think of heroic people like Ted Williams, baseball player, Joe DiMaggio, baseball player, Walter Johnson, baseball player, Yogi Berra, baseball player. All of these are, because baseball is big back then. The other major sports didn't really exist. Jimmy Stewart, an actor, they all left to go fight in the war. Jimmy Stewart went back. Jimmy Stewart and Ted Williams went back for Korea as well, right?
Yeah.
That used to be the hero back in the day. And it matters because hero worship and culture is not new, certainly. I mean, it always happens like that, whether it's gods or otherwise. But it's important to culture who your heroes are because it is the largest form of aspirational marketing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the person that I want to be like when I grow up, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Fireman, fucking astronaut. That used to be a cowboy, right? That used to like be the case. Now it's YouTuber, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, if your aspirational marketing is focused on, you know, jackasses, then you're going to get a generation of fucking jackasses, which is exactly what we have, right?
Yeah.
But we did that. I just want to be clear about that. We're the ones that did that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's bad news in that regard, I guess. But the good news is any problem that you've caused, you can uncause.
Yeah.
Right. And it's your responsibility to do so, especially if you're specifically guilty of it. But just generally speaking, we as like Gen X and older millennials have allowed this shit to happen.
Yeah.
We allowed our convenience to purchase our liberty away, which is something we've been warned about for hundreds of years not to do, and we did it anyways. So, you know, I'm not a doomsayer. This stuff can be fixed.
Yeah. And I think it's a responsibility of every single person to realize that when you run away from discomfort, you are running away from growth.
Mm.
The way that you develop, the way that you improve is by embracing discomfort. It's by putting yourself in a place where you are uncomfortable, where you are not within, you know, a safe space. That's why safe spaces are so dangerous.
Mm.
Because life ain't safe.
No, it's not.
It's not. And all it is just a way for you to convince yourself that you are safe. But actually, if you are doing everything possible to make your life set as safe as possible in every particular way, then I'm very sorry to break it to you, but you ain't living. And what that is going to do is it is going to create resentment and frustration within yourself because you will know that you are not living a life well lived.
Yeah, it's we've created safe spaces to make ourselves feel safe. Then we invented self-care as a concept to convince ourselves of the nobility of that effort.
Yeah.
I mean, we've gaslit ourselves. How fucking stupid is that? Jesus Christ, dude.
But then we wonder why we're miserable.
Yeah.
And you go, you're miserable because you're not living a life.
Yeah. Go out in the woods and chop trees down.
Yeah.
Even if there's no real, just doing stuff will make you feel better about life. That's what Chris always says, that just go do the thing, whatever it is. It doesn't even matter what it is, really. Like, we get there's so much barrier to entry, I guess, mentally for a lot of people. Like, well, I don't know how I can go change the world. You change it by changing yourself, right?
It's the only way to do it.
It's like, what the fuck, man? We've been talking about this for thousands of years now. It's always been the same answer.
You know, the thing that I love to do more than anything at the moment, apart from comedy and all the and this stuff, which is my job, is boxing. I have a trainer. I do boxing once a week because it is incredibly honest. Once you start sparring, the moment you start getting into your head, the moment you stop focusing on what you're doing, that's the moment you're going to get hit. And every time you get hit, that's a reminder. Hey, you weren't on it.
Mm.
You left yourself open. You weren't concentrating. You let your mind drift off. Or the other really powerful thing is you let your emotions get the better of you.
Right, yeah.
And when you let the emotion get the better of you, that's when your guard comes down and that's when you're going to get hit. I was listening to this, he's a nice guy. He's a very progressive podcaster. He's like, I'm thinking about doing, boxing because I want to know how to protect myself, but I don't want to get punched. And I nearly shouted out loud, that's the point.
Yeah.
The point is to get hit and to keep moving forward. That's the point. To realize that even though you take a blow, that's all it is.
Yeah.
And you will get over that blow.
Yeah, that's two very different worldviews. And it's the same phrase that both use, what's the worst that can happen? One group says, what's the worst that can happen? And they follow it up with YOLO, right?
Yeah.
And just do some crazy shit or whatever. And the other group thinks, what's the worst that can happen? And they ruminate on what the worst thing that could possibly happen is and let that stop them from doing the thing. It's the same concept applied differently, and it has two vastly different results.
Yeah.
Like the reality in life always is the weight doesn't get lighter, you get stronger, right? That's how it works in every facet of life. You get smarter, you get stronger, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's very frustrating to have to keep saying that to people, but, what are you going to do, I guess? That's just the way it is.
The only thing that you can do is be the best possible version of yourself and be an example to everybody else around you. And that means continually pushing yourself in whatever you do, whether you go to the gym, whether you go to the gym, testing yourself with weights, going, well, I've always wanted to do boxing. All those things that you've never done that you really should do that you're kind of ashamed about. Hands up, I've never learned how to drive. I lived in London, blah, blah, blah. I'm learning how to drive now at the age of 41. I took my provisional test. That's a driving theory test. I was the oldest guy in that room by about 30 years.
Yeah.
And I was surrounded by all these kids in their school uniform.
They probably think you're like some retarded immigrant or something.
Yeah, exactly. That were a pedophile. Yeah. Come here. Let's go to the place. But and it is kind of humiliating, but I've got to do it.
Yeah, who cares?
I've got to do it. I've got to do it. I've got to push myself through it. It's the same with stand-up. If you rely on your same jokes, you're going to be the old, bitter, burnt-out comic in the corner of the club, pointing the finger at everyone else, going, I'm not where I wanted to be because of X, Y, and Z. It's like, no, dude, you've been using the same set for 20-odd years, and you're still doing jokes about Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
That's on you, my brother, not on anyone else.
Well, to that point about challenging yourself and stuff, let's talk, before we get out, we got to get out of here in a sec, but before we get out of here, let's talk about your show with Constantine. You guys have some difficult conversations.
Yep.
With people that don't think the way you do.
Yep.
Right? Which is a good thing.
Yep.
Obviously. How did it start? And then you guys have been, I think in my opinion, you guys have been the most successful of all the shows in doing that specific thing, which is talking to people that you don't agree with. Because there's other shows that do it, like the Whatever podcast, and I'm not asking you to talk shit about them, but I will. All they do is bring in they just bring in a bunch of Muppets dunk on them. It kind of reminds me of how Ben Shapiro used to go to colleges and dunk on college kids. I'm like, that's not very impressive to me, dude.
No.
Like, have a debate with a peer, and then we'll see how it goes, which he does sometimes to his credit. But anyways, the way you guys do it is you both argue your points, right? But it isn't like you're trying to gotcha or dunk on people or anything like that. It's just like, let's let's have a conversation. I want to truly understand why you feel the way you do.
And that's, so the reason we started it is because it was in, so for, I mean, this is a predominantly American podcast. Mm. So let me just explain a little bit of the backstory. During in 2016, we voted for Brexit, which was we voted to leave the European Union, which as political shocks go, in my years on this planet, is the biggest political shock of all time. No one really expected it. It threw the establishment into chaos, into panic. The prime minister resigned. And then a number of narratives bubbled to the surface, propagated by the mainstream media, that this was the result of race, stupid, thick race, racist white men and white people who hated immigrants. And that's the reason we voted Brexit. Okay. And Constantine and I were talking about this and we were saying to ourselves, this doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
My mother, first generation immigrant from Latin America, voted Brexit. My dad, an old white guy from a blue collar background who married a Latin American woman of color in the 1970s when it wasn't cool, when there were no hashtags, you know, when there actually was significant racism, he voted Brexit. So I knew that there was something else going on. And that's how we started, because we started to want to dig into this issue and work out what was actually happening in our country. And from there, and we were two Remainers, so we voted to remain within the European Union, and we talked to a lot of Brexiteers to go, well, why did you do this? Why did you vote? Why did you tick that box, as it were? And that's how it started. And more, I just realized that people are interesting. And if people have deeply held beliefs and worldviews, I want to know why you have that. I want to know why you think a certain way. I want you to know. I want to know why you think it's important to be able to bear arms.
Mm.
Everybody there's a lot of people in my country goes, oh, stupid, thick Americans. Well, that's stupid, because I know plenty of smart people who love guns and think that you should have the right to bear arms. So it's not stupidity. There's something else going on here. And that is it with everything. I find it the most interesting to talk to someone who I fundamentally disagree with.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to unpack all that stuff. To me, it's like the same reason your math teacher made you show your work.
Yeah.
He doesn't get off on watching long division happen. I promise you. Nobody likes that. That's
somebody who has taught math and taught long division, that is correct.
No, nobody wants to see that shit. But if you show your work, I can see exactly where you fucked up.
Yeah.
And then having a conversation with somebody, particularly about, deeply held beliefs, the chances of you changing someone's mind that day are extremely low, right? But if you can either expose your own flaw in logic or their flaw in logic, at some point they're going to have to face that, right? Like you call it planting a seed or whatever, but, and usually the conversation is not for them, it's for the audience, right?
Absolutely.
It's like you think like this guy does. Okay, well, I mean, and this is when you watch these debates, it's important for you to fucking go in with that mindset. Like if my if my belief can be proven wrong, then it has to change.
Yeah.
Right? Otherwise, it's religion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if that's okay with you, then fine, right? Mm. But say that. Don't pretend like it's an objective reality when it's, because like I'm not going to, with the whole pronoun thing, I know it's maybe it's rude, but I won't participate in that. Mm. I will not. Like, I'm not going to participate in your delusion. I don't think it does you any good. I don't think it does me any good.
Yeah.
Like, if you're just like, put on a wig and start calling me she, no, I'm not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You're a dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do. Those are immutable characteristics. That's why they're protected. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? From discrimination. But it's like that. That is the baseline for protection against discrimination, is that it's an immutable characteristic. But if you can personally choose to change it, then it's no longer an immutable characteristic. You can't call it an immutable characteristic if you yourself have changed it. That is drives me nuts.
It's a very profound point. And you see this language creep into everything now. So there's this scandal happening in the UK where there is a play called Slave Play. I haven't seen it. I've read about it. It doesn't sound like a good play. The reviews of it weren't particularly good, but that's kind of beside the point. featuring actually Kit Harington. Kit Harington is one of the main actors in it, the guy from Game
John of Thrones.
Jon Snow. Yeah. And the playwright is a black guy, and in conjunction with the theatre, they did a night called A Blackout, right? So it's where, and this is where it gets really interesting, it's a night exclusively for people who identify as black. And you're going, what? Well, let's accept the fact that inviting people into a space by virtue of racial segregation is moronic and dangerous and evil, and that's something that we have fought against for a long time. And these idiots, because that's what they are, in my opinion, idiots are trying to bring that back. Let's just ignore that for a moment, and let's just get to the phrase "people who identify as black." Like, what does that mean? Like, if I do a 23andMe and I find out I'm 0.4% Nigerian, does that mean I'm allowed to be black?
I guess, right? Why not? But here, it's the doctor's office is where all of these fucking fantasies fall apart.
Yeah.
It's like, ma'am, or it's like, sir, you have testicular cancer. And it's like, excuse me, it's ma'am. It's like, okay, ma'am, you have testicular cancer. You fucking idiot. You know what I mean? Like, and if you're like a white person can't get sickle cell anemia, for example.
Yeah.
Right? It's a misshape of the blood cell that causes an iron deficiency. You can't get that as a white man. Right? You have to be like, I think, at least a quarter black to even be susceptible to that.
Yeah, from a certain part of Africa. Yeah.
So it's like, there comes it, and I guess it goes back to your analogy about the blue collar worker. There's always let's call it a glass ceiling for this retardation, and it's reality. Right?
Yeah.
At some point, it bites you again. And then, you know, it's no wonder that this group of people identifies themselves as perpetual victims. I don't think it's just about their relationship with whiteness or the patriarchy and its other stupid shit. I think they are living a delusional fantasy, and every time it butts up against reality, it hurts their feelings. So they are in a constant, perpetual state of victimhood because of that, more so than any of the other stuff that's going on.
And look, if you see the world for a particular lens, then that is going to be reflected back to you.
Yeah.
Because life is tough, it's hard, people aren't going to... You know, I was being brought to the stage yesterday by this comedian, and he went to me, and he went about me. Oh, he's met me several times. Mm. He knows about the podcast and whatever else. And look, that is all irrelevant, it doesn't matter. I've never heard of this guy. Part of the thing you should do for your fellow comic is when you bring them up, big them up, make sure that they've got a nice level of applause so that when they come on, they've got the best possible chance of doing well.
Lubricate, yeah.
Yeah, right? And that's what you do. Mm. And he went, oh, I've never heard of this guy and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he looks, you know, and he then made a couple of comments. Like, he said a few jokes about me and what about my appearance and it didn't really get a lot of, and it made the night more difficult than it had to be. And it pissed me off. Mm-hmm. I was like, why are you doing that? Why are you making... I wouldn't do that to you. Why? But if you have a victim mindset, you'd be like, oh, right, then the gig's done, the performance is done, this guy hates me, this guy... When the reality is, what actually happened is he was probably on stage and he thought it was funny to say this stuff. Turns out it wasn't. Yeah. And he made my set a bit more difficult than it needed to be. Right. And that's all it was. But if you look at it through a victim mindset, it's like, oh, you know, he was disrespectful. He was just doing this. He was bullying me, whatever it is. Or he knew who I was and was deliberately trying to mess me up. And then you're getting into the world of narratives and fantasy.
Yeah.
And then what happens is that you're starting to see yourself as the victim. And then you start to feel put upon and that it's bad and that... your life is so much harder than everybody else's because nobody else had to deal with that on that particular night.
Yeah, yeah. But that's Hanlon's razor, right? Like, don't imply malice where incompetence will suffice. That's a good rule in life because I can accept mistakes without feeling the need to get revenge for them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if somebody makes a mistake and your brain, you should intentionally program your brain this way, particularly if you're like an education or a parent or a coach or something like that. Mistakes cannot be met with like a revenge or hateful attitude. Yeah. They should be met with like, you know, certainly hold the standard and shit like that. Like, hey, fuckface, let's get it right next time. But there's no need to feel like personally attacked because somebody else made a mistake. That's such a weird way to think about life.
Yeah.
But to me, it sounds like when you say it all like that, it sounds like road rage, but kind of internalized. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Like I'm somebody that things happen to. That's how I feel in my head.
Yeah.
So this dude cut me off. Well, clearly he doesn't. He's a fucking dick.
Yeah.
So I got to do something. Like, no, he just fucking, maybe he didn't even see you right there. You know what I mean? People, you've never made a mistake driving before. Well, you haven't because you can't fucking drive.
I'm learning how to drive and I've made many mistakes. Yeah, I can tell you. Yeah.
You know, I didn't even, this has nothing to do with anything, but I didn't even do the parallel parking part of my driving test. I got to that point and, the lady that was giving me the test, I think it was like 15 at the time.
Yeah.
I was like, how many points can I miss and still pass? And she was like, whatever the fuck she said, I don't remember what it was. And I'm like, and how many have I missed? She was like, none yet. And I'm like, and how much is the parallel parking? And it was less. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm just not going to do this. I just turned the car off and flipped her the keys and walked in. I'll see you inside. She goes, no, you can't do that. I'm like, yeah, I can. I can try and fail, or I can not try. I don't give a fuck about parallel parking. So that's
you see,
on you.
But driving.
I was just being a dick. I was a 15-year-old kid. I was just being a dick. I shouldn't have done that, but it was – I don't know why I thought of that.
But look, and I accept a 41-year-old man not being able to drive is not a good look. I accept all of that. However, I have seen the way Americans drive.
Yeah, it's not great.
No, and like your test is a piece of piss. And I've got mates who passed their test in the UK and America, and they said that the American test is not, it's not even a test.
No, you take like two right turns, two left turns, change lanes, and then parallel park. I think those are the things you get graded on. And that then maintaining the lane and using your signals correctly and shit like that. But it's fucking dumb.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to do?
Have a better test, mate.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, yeah. All right, we got to get out of here. Before we do, tell everybody where they can find you and find your shows and shit.
So my social is Francis J. Foster on Instagram and Twitter. Give me a follow on there. I'm always putting up comedy content, satirical stuff. My podcast is called Trigonometry, where we interview the most interesting people from around the world in a variety of fields, psychology, economics, politics, comedians, whatever you like. They're all on there. That's it, Trigger Pod. And that's it.
Sweet. Well, thanks for coming today, man. I appreciate it. It's been a great conversation.
Oh, I loved it. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you all for listening. This has been Citizen.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.